Hello, my name is Jane Martin, and my favorite thing is Paris.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome back to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. It is Sunday, February 27th, barely in Central Time Zone. Like I said, I think I should commit to moving this to become a Monday podcast because Sundays are getting hard for me to swing lately. This weekend, I'm talking with author Jane Martin, and we're talking about traveling to Paris, traveling in Europe, and I just wanted to call out that we recorded this a couple weeks ago before the war in Ukraine started, the incredible acts of aggression and war by Russia and Putin against Ukraine. So if it feels a little weird that we're just talking about the glories of traveling in Europe, it's because it was before this war had started. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. I think it's important to acknowledge time and place. Tomorrow, if you are new to the podcast, I have been going through treatment for stage one breast cancer over the last few months, and tomorrow I start radiation therapy. I have 3 weeks of treatment, which is less than the initial 4 weeks I was told I would have. I don't know what it will feel like. I don't know how I will feel. I don't know what time my appointments are other than the one tomorrow. So all in all, I'm feeling very out of control right now, knowing that I've got 15 appointments ahead and I only know what time one of them is. And that is what is unsettling in my life right now. If you are looking for TV, I did find some TV that felt good this weekend. Caught up on Righteous Gemstones, which is Danny Breyer, I think. That's not his name. Caught up on Righteous Gemstones, which has John Goodman in the lead. He's hysterical, as always. Finished watching Caught Up on Ghosts on CBS, and then I started watching the BBC Ghosts. And, of course, I finished Love is Blind. So if you want to gossip about any of those shows, please find me on the internet. I got to spend some time this afternoon on a Zoom with my international Jewish community through ROI. And the Schusterman Foundation. So we met with a woman in our group who runs the AJCC in Ukraine. And then we had someone explain the history of how we got here. So while this podcast is admittedly lighthearted in tone, it's not because we can't hold two truths at once, which is a love and desire to travel and see more of the world, and also concern for people in Ukraine and other countries facing war right now. So I'll keep this short and sweet to be able to still get this out technically on Sunday. Jane's book is called The Daddy Chronicles, Memoirs of a Fatherless Daughter, available March 15th from Whiskey Tit Publishers. All the information to pre-order is in the show notes. Please follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Good Pods. Leave a 5-star review. I'd really appreciate it. And wash your hands, wear a mask, get your booster, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things. We get recommendations without using an algorithm. Today, I'm really excited to be back talking with authors. In the fall, I talked to so many authors as their books were coming out, and spring seems to be the time when the flowers bloom and new publications bloom as well. So this week I am joined by Jane Martin. Jane's newest book, The Daddy Chronicles, Memoir of a Fatherless Daughter, is coming out this spring. And we'll talk about the date and where you can get it in a little bit. This is not Jane's first book. She's got a book called Tender Cuts of Flash Fiction, also a movie, which I'm very curious to learn more about. But Jane, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day out here in California, and I'm happy to be here.
We've got sunshine and snow in Chicago.
Oh.
But it's supposed to warm up to like 40 degrees today, so I'm very excited.
40 degrees. We weenie Californians would be like complaining. I can't tell you. We would be just whining so much.
Are you a lifelong Californian?
I am, probably about fifth generation.
Wow.
Born and raised.
That's rare. It seems rare.
I guess. I was born in San Francisco. That's my hometown.
Yeah.
And I'm now currently near Santa Barbara. In a very rural area of ranches and vineyards, and it's very peaceful.
Oh, that's beautiful. I think I've been to Santa Barbara just once, right after college. I went there. Mm-hmm. Santa Barbara has a beautiful courthouse, right?
It does. Yes, it's all very Spanish style. The whole heritage is very Spanish style.
Great. And you warned me before we started recording that you also have a couple dogs. Have you had dogs your whole life?
Well, mostly I was a cat person for most of my life. But I kind of stumbled into dogs a few years ago, and one was given to me, and then the cat died, and now I'm a dog person.
Yeah.
So I have a little tiny Yorkie mutt mix named Miss Pickles. And then I have a Chihuahua named Ellie, and she's around here somewhere. So I'm into the tiny ones.
Yeah. So similar to cats in size, and you can scoop them up if something happens.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I also have two horses, and you cannot scoop them up.
You cannot scoop up a horse. That's the benefit of living in ranch country.
Yeah.
Are you an equestrian?
I used to compete over fences.
Wow.
I used to do 100 jumpers, but not anymore because my horse is too old now.
Yeah.
And I may be too old too. I don't, those unexpected landings are a little more difficult these days. So I just kind of hack him around now. And then I just got a new filly. She's a year and a half old, and I rescued her from kind of a neglectful situation. Mm-hmm. She was kind of like an unplanned pregnancy, and now she's on the payroll. But you know, I just want to raise her right and find her a good home.
Yeah. I don't know if you're on the app TikTok, but I spend too much time on it. It's just little video clips, and part of the algorithm, TikTok has decided I'm interested in horse rescue. So I do follow two or three horse rescue accounts of people going either to slaughterhouse auctions and finding the horses that no horse should be in that situation.
Yeah.
But the horses that were really got swept up in it and have incredible potential. And so I feel like I've learned a fair amount about the need for horse rescue and in this country.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of backyard breeders, unfortunately, and a lot of babies that just don't get taken care of.
Yeah.
So it's a bad situation. It is, but she's a sweetie pie, and I think she'll have a good future. I'm going to make sure she has a good future.
Yeah.
And find her forever home in a couple of years when she's all trained and kind of ready to go. So
is a year and a half Do you ride her, or is that too young?
No, she's too young.
Okay.
Yeah. She won't be ridden for another probably year.
Okay.
She's got a lot of growing to do.
Okay.
So, you know, they ride horses, especially on the racetrack, at barely two, and they break them down, and that's not a good situation. So I'm not really in a rush with her. I'm just kind of playing with her, getting her well-mannered and well-trained, and then she'll be a good horse for someone.
Oh, that sounds really lovely.
Yeah.
I once was reading an interview, the author Jennifer Weiner, who wrote like Good in Bed, she writes, traditionally women's fiction, I'm not going to call it a beach read because I, you know.
Oh, sure. No, I know who Jennifer is. Mm-hmm.
She wrote this book on advice for writers, not a book, an article, and her number one was to get a dog. Because a dog forces you to have a routine and get out of bed and start your day. And she felt like having dogs helped her build her writing practice. And that has always stuck with me as a person with cats.
Uh-huh. Well, cats are so much easier. Oh my God. I miss having cats. I love cats. Mm-hmm. But where I live right now, it's coyote country, and it's hard to keep them inside, and it's not safe for them to go outside. So
yeah.
I'm very careful with these two little dogs. They never go anywhere outside without being on a leash.
Mm-hmm.
But I miss having cats.
Yeah.
But animals in general, you know, they force you to get out of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my two are snoozing next to me, Cowboy and Spidey. Spidey's 20.
Oh.
So I've had him since I rescued him from the patio of a restaurant where I was a waitress 20 years ago in Colorado. And Cowboy, so he's like a little old man, and then Cowboy is kind of my linebacker. He's like 13 and big and strong, but also kind of lazy.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the book you've got coming out.
It's called The Daddy Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up as a fatherless daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my father just basically did not want me from the time I was in the womb. He wasn't equipped to be a father. And, you know, I'm sure he had his own baggage. But the book is really not about him. It's about me and how what that did in terms of trust issues, what that did in terms of the ability to form loving relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was charismatic and emotionally unavailable. So I've spent my life looking for men who are charismatic and emotionally unavailable and trying to get them to love me to fix the relationship that I never had with my father.
Yeah.
So the book is written in scenes. So each chapter is pretty much one page. It's kind of like flash fiction, but it's flash memoir.
Wow.
And it starts really with a tale of when I was a baby, and it was a tale told to me. Well, I'll tell you how it started. It started, I was in a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And we were given these prompts, and one prompt was a photo of a woman kind of in a 40s style sort of dress with her hair, you know, was a nice scarf wrapped up around her head, but she was slumped in a chair, half passed out, and she had a cigarette burning in her hand and a glass, which I assumed was vodka. And I wondered, who is this woman? And the story that came to me was the other woman, that she was waiting for her married lover who didn't show up again. So I wrote that pretty much thinking it was fiction, not thinking it was anything else. And then another prompt was write a story about first love. And so I thought, well, what's a first love? And I thought, for a girl, it's your father.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been told a story by my grandmother, who I think hated my father, about coming into a room one day, and I was a baby, and I was in my playpen, and I was just screaming, crying, and he was just turning up the television. Mm. He was just sitting there turning up the television. And so I wrote that. And then I had this epiphany that the woman waiting for her married lover and this baby were the same person. And then I realized, oh my God, not only is it the same character, it's me.
Yeah.
And the book proceeded from there, where I filled in that journey. And so there are scenes from being a very young girl, and they move through my teenage years and into my adult years. And that's really how the book is structured. That's what it's about.
Wow. How long did you sit with from that workshop to realizing I need to write more of these scenes? And ultimately, at what point did you realize that there's enough here for a book, that you were ready to switch from flash fiction to memoir?
Well, the workshop I was in was a 30-day workshop.
Okay.
And it was by given by Meg Pokris, and it was based on her novella in flash called The Loss Detector, mm-hmm. which is a fiction, and every page is a different story. And it was about a single mother with her two children. The father is not in the picture, and it's told the narrator is the daughter. And what Meg did was every day we would read a story, and then she would give an assignment, a prompt based on that story. So within 30 days, I ended up having a first draft of the book. It was crazy. It poured out of me.
Yeah.
It was the craziest thing. It was a real gift. But it just poured out of me. And then at the end of 30 days, I had the structure. And then I worked on it a couple of months and added the connective tissue and rewrote and revised and did all the things that you do. But at the end of 3 months, I had the book.
Wow.
So it was like, it was just like it had been hovering over me mm-hmm. for years and wanted to be written.
Right.
So it was kind of a crazy experience. I've never experienced anything quite like that. You know, as an adult, I had intellectualized my feelings about my father and realized that, you know, you can't give what you don't have, and mm-hmm. Pretty much forgiven him.
Yeah.
And, you know, but apparently there was this angry child still inside of me.
Sure.
And she was saying, wait a minute, I have something to say too.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was writing the book, I was surprised at all the anger that came up. A lot of anger and a lot of hurt came up, and it came from that inner child that I had really been kind of squashing and saying, it doesn't matter, it's all over, forget about it, you know?
Right.
But that doesn't go away.
Right.
You know, you are, when you have that kind of experience so young, you're pretty hardwired. And, you know, you can do the therapy and you can get the understanding and you can learn to deal. I mean,
right.
I had a very, very happy life. I'm not, you know, but that doesn't go away.
Right.
So that was a surprise to me.
So she really opened a Pandora's box, if you will, of trapped emotions, trapped anger that the book gave it an outlet. Sounds
yes,
like.
Yes, exactly. And memories came up that I had completely forgotten, had not even thought about, you know, would just pop up. Little scenes would pop up and then I would explore those. So, it was interesting. And then I learned as I was writing it, I kind of started to read about fatherless daughters. And learned that one out of three women identify as fatherless. That's a staggering statistic.
It really is. I never would have put it so high.
Through death, divorce, emotional abandonment, mm-hmm. Through any number, they identify.
Right.
So it was staggering.
Mm.
But it made me feel much less alone. And yeah. So, you know, in writing the book, I hope that others will feel less alone or less broken or less like, yeah, it's me. I'm the one who's messed up.
Right. You know? Do you have any siblings or cousins that you ran memories by as things surfaced that you hadn't, that weren't top of mind or that you had repressed?
No, I don't. I was an only child.
Mm-hmm.
I have cousins that are like 10 years older than I am.
Sure.
And they would give me they could give me more insight into my mother and father's relationship before I was born, because he was 10 years older than she was.
Okay.
And she ran off with him when she was just 17.
Wow.
And they had this like lifestyle of gambling and this and that and travel and alcohol and drugs and just free lifestyle. And at 32, she got pregnant with me. She wanted a baby. Well, he'd had her to himself for what, 15 years? And then I came along. He was 42. He still had alcohol and drug problems. And he really saw her slipping away. He saw me literally inhabiting her body.
Right.
So I can only kind of guess at his feelings, but learning more about their relationship from my older cousins, it was helpful.
Mm-hmm. Right, because if they're 10 years older than you, they have clear memories of life before Jane.
Yeah, and of my mother leaving my father when she was pregnant and coming back to the family, and you know, and then he was in and out of our lives. It is crazy. The first 5 or 6 years of my life are just, they're missing in a way.
Mm-hmm.
They're missing.
When does the book come out?
It will be out on March 15th, I believe. Wonderful. And it's available for pre-order now.
Great.
And it has my picture on the front as a little girl.
Oh, I was wondering.
Yeah, I think I'm about 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. And it has my picture on the front. I was really cute. Why didn't he love me? You know. but it is available for pre-order now. And you can go to whiskeytitbooks.com and put in the title, and there it is.
Great. And I will link to this so that people have an easy time making the pre-order.
Thank you.
I look forward to reading it. I don't know. I don't want to say platitudes. I'm sorry that you had to experience this relationship with your father in order for the book to come to life. You know, I wish you didn't have to write this book, but I still look forward to the art that you've made with.
Thank you. And I have to say, I don't, you know, whatever he didn't give me in life, I did get his gene pool.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a very accomplished, very happy, very good life. I've never had I've never married. I've never gotten that part right. But as I grew older, I had so much else that made me happy.
Good.
So, you know, I know plenty of people who have great fathers and their lives are a mess. So, you know, you just can't know.
Yep. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. I'm curious, before we move to your favorite thing, I am curious about, because on your publication page, as I scroll down, I see a movie, Big Spender. So are you a screenwriter as well?
I wrote for television for about 25 years.
Wow.
And that was the 80s, the 90s, through the beginning of, through about 2005, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So Big Spender was a movie I wrote for Animal Planet. Mm-hmm. And it's based on the true story of the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and their program at the Wallkill Correctional Facility, where they put together prison inmates with these abused, neglected horses.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a fascinating program, and I got to go and visit it. And then I wrote the movie for Animal Planet, but I've written a lot for Lifetime, pretty much all the networks. I mean, I did a lot of that.
I just went over to your IMDb to take a peek.
Okay.
Which I think is missing. I believe it's missing things, but.
Could be, because, you know, I wrote a lot of things that I never got credit for. I did a lot of rewriting, polishing, things like that. And the Writers Guild is very particular. They have to approve the credits. The producers don't give the credit. They have to submit them, and the Writers Guild will look at all the scripts and they will decide the credits. So I did a lot of rewrites. And then I did a lot of movies that never got made, because back then most of them didn't. They developed maybe 200 movies a year, and maybe 30 would get made. But, you know, I was a writer for hire. I still got paid, but
sure.
It would have been nice to get them made.
To see more of them on the screen. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting, because that's the type of work that Carrie Fisher became known for in her writing career, right? That they would bring her scripts and she would do rewrites and
I think stuff. She did. Yeah, I think she did a lot of that.
Yeah. Oh, how interesting. So, Jane, this podcast, in addition to learning about people's projects and current projects, we also talk about favorite things. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited about your topic today. So what are we here to talk about?
Paris,
France.
Wonderful Paris. You know, I just, you can probably hear the barking in the background.
It's totally fine.
Yeah. It's like a plane going over. Anyway, I really didn't start traveling until just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first time, my first big trip was to Italy, and which I loved. And then this, I went to France for a writer's retreat, flash fiction writer's retreat. And it was in Bordeaux, the countryside, in this wonderful chateau. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be in Bordeaux, I'm going to go to Paris. Well,
yeah.
Sure. So after the retreat, I went and a couple of the gals went with me and went to Paris, and it was my first time there. Come to find out, Martin is a very common French name.
It is.
And I had always identified as French because my father's family was from French Quebec.
Okay.
And so I remember, I've just always identified, felt very strongly about it. So I went to France, and oh my God, I had been studying on the Duolingo app.
Mm-hmm.
So I can say a few things, but my first time there, I threw all my things in my hotel room and I was dying for a glass of wine. So I go marching out down the street. I'm staying in the 7th district, where the big gold dome in Valadiz is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm marching down the street, and I see a little cafe that looks really cute. And I go up to the guy at the door, and in my very best practiced French, I say, "Bonjour, je parle un peu français. Je voudrais du vin et le fromage et du pain." And I'm so happy. And he looks at me and says, "Right this way, madam."
Oh. Fine. So you asked did you ask him for cheese and wine?
I did cheese, wine, and bread. And he was very kind. And he asked me what kind of cheese I wanted and what kind of wine. And I told him that it was my first time in Paris and my first meal. And I said, "You choose for me. What should I have?" And he was lovely. And he brought me the salad and selection of cheese and the bread. Oh, to die for the bread.
Yes.
And this glass of Sancerre white wine. And I just sat there amazed that here I was sitting in a cafe in Paris, where all the people are beautiful.
Yes,
it's true.
It's true.
It's true. All the people are beautiful. It was just amazing. And then that night we went on a champagne dinner cruise on the Seine. That was amazing. That was, and I remember my first sighting of the Eiffel Tower.
Was it during the day or at night?
Well, as it was in the day in the distance as we were driving from the airport.
Yeah.
But at night, it's right there and it's lit up. And you cruised right past it. And I just looked at it and thought, oh, the mothership.
Yeah.
It's the mothership. Oh, my God. And then I went, I took a lot of guided tours. Mm-hmm. They're the great ones. I took, you know, food tours, walking tours. And one day I decided I wanted a private guide. And I told the people I want a woman. Because obviously mm-hmm. I have issues with men.
Yes. right. And if you're going for charismatic, emotionally unavailable men, I do feel like a French tour guide would be right at the top of the list if he was a man.
Yes. I just saw trouble written all over that. So, and they sent me this lovely girl. She was about 34, I think, and she had long red hair, and her name was Camille. And I have red hair and we look like mother and daughter. And she came to my hotel and we walked all over that city and she was adorable. And we just bonded. She was like, you don't seem older than me at all. You seem like a girlfriend.
Aww.
And it was like, oh, I just fell in love with her. So we stayed in touch and that's been really nice. But we went, she was so knowledgeable about everything. And we just walked everywhere. I was very surprised with how clean everything is. Mm-hmm. There are these little tiny mini street cleaners, like Jeep size or smaller, that are going all over the city. I went to a public bathroom near the Louvre, and you know, can imagine what I right. expected. I mean, I thought you could eat off the floor. This yeah. was incredible. But it was, I was only there for like 5 days. Mm. And it wasn't enough. And when I came home, I dreamed and thought about it every single day. Because now there's so many more places I want to go now that I've been there that mm-hmm. that I didn't get a chance to go to. So I'm going back.
Oh,
I'm going
wonderful.
Back.
When are you going?
I'm going April 26th, and I'm staying through May 9th.
Wonderful.
And
a nice long trip.
Yes, and I found a cute little apartment, which is much cheaper than a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just excited. And the food, oh my God. I mean, I don't
yes,
know how they stay so thin.
Let's talk about that. So were you in a... Because I've been to Paris also once and I tacked it onto a trip to Barcelona. I took the train from Barcelona, which was wonderful. And, but I stayed in, I don't remember, but I don't remember where the hotel was. I can see it in my head. And it was one where like dinner came with your room, not breakfast, but dinner, which is interesting. So let's talk about some of the meals you had.
Well, at my hotel, breakfast came.
Okay.
Le petit déjeuner.
Mm.
Uh-huh. I just love that. So every morning, we go down to the little dining area, and there were chocolate croissants. Oh, my God.
Ugh.
And, you know, scrambled eggs and this and that and the other. And it was just enough. So it kind of got you on your day, and that mm-hmm. was one more meal you didn't have to pay for. But the breads and the wines and the chocolate and, oh, my God, the gelato. There's nothing like it.
Were you there in the summer and the spring?
I was there in September.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. I was there from, I think the 6th to the 11th.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was great because there weren't a lot of tourists. It wasn't mm-hmm. crowded. Everybody was lovely and friendly and oh my God, the bread. The really interesting thing at the restaurants were nobody brings you a check until you ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say le décimon, s'il vous plaît, or le addition. Yes,
it can be very confusing when you're
but
like.
It's nice because they don't they don't rush you out like an American restaurant. It's like, here's your check. Right. Got your money. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
No, they like you to linger.
Yeah. Did you, when you were trying bread, were you and your, the girlfriends that you were with, were you, did you find a bakery on day one and you went back there every day? Or were you, let's try a new bakery every day? Are you, no, do you like to become a regular, or do you want to sample everything?
Well, it was, all the bread I ate was primarily at restaurants because right. they just bring you tons of bread mm-hmm. and it's all really good. And most of it is from, I think the bakery is Polaire, P-O-L-A-R-E. And it's in the Marais district, the fourth district. And when I did the walking tour of that district, we did stop in there and they said, yes, so many of the restaurants get their bread from here. So I wasn't out buying a lot of bread, but I was eating it at every meal because they just, and it's the most delicious bread. And they do not shortchange you. I mean, you start getting low on that bread, there's more right there.
Right.
They come back. The wines were incredible. I don't think I ever spent more than $9 on a glass of wine. And that was an exception. Most of them were $6 or $7. Of course, I don't know how it is where you are, but here in California, I mean, you get a glass of wine that's a thimble for like $13.
Yeah.
You know, it's ridiculous. So the prices of the food were really reasonable. All the food was amazing. And everywhere you look, it's beautiful. It's like yes. everything is beautiful. And I love the French people. They were, despite the reputation they have, I never met anybody who wasn't really kind and generous. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, when they see you making a reasonable attempt to speak French, you know, they really appreciate that.
Yeah.
So, my French is better and I'll go back this time. And I've got, you know, a list of a lot of places I want to go. And so I just could not be happier. I'm going to some more museums this time. I didn't go last time. I did go to the Picasso Museum, which was very interesting. But there are a couple more that I'm going to go to. And mostly I'm just going to walk and sit and eat and converse and just try to have a French experience with French people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I remember. So again, I was only there for a weekend, so I didn't go. And it was the weekend. I don't think it was the Paris Marathon, but there was a major running race the Sunday of the weekend I was there.
Uh-huh.
So like buses were rerouted. Like they were running along the Seine. So it sort of cut the neighborhood I was in. Because to say I was in walking distance of the Notre Dame Cathedral is everything's in walking distance. But I was...
Okay, you were probably in the Latin Quarter, the 6th.
Yes.
Were you near Shakespeare? Shakespeare and Company Bookstore?
Oh, I went there, yes. Beeline.
That's in the 6th. That's real, very close to Notre Dame.
That was... The places that were on my must-go list were Shakespeare Book Company. And like to take a cruise on the Seine to see, I didn't do a dinner cruise, but I did an evening cruise that got to the Eiffel Tower for the sparkles.
Oh, yes. It's amazing.
And then I did a hop on, hop off tour because I always think I would have poo-pooed those in my 20s. But now I realize that a hop on, hop off bus is actually a great way to get your bearings in a city.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see a couple places that first day, but you get it's a really good way to get the physical lay of the land.
Mm-hmm.
So the places I wanted to see were things that were in Amelie, the movie Amelie.
Oh, yes.
So I went to like the corner where the shop was that was across the street from her apartment. So mm-hmm. I went there. I went to that corner. I went to Shakespeare. I took an evening cruise, and because it was at the end of work, I went to a couple patisseries. I went to that cafe where like Sartre and everybody used to sit and have coffee all day. I went there.
Mm-hmm.
but I didn't go to the Louvre. I really regret not going into Notre Dame, or no, I know I'm pronouncing it terribly, because it was maybe 6 months before the fire.
Oh, yes.
So I do regret being so laissez-faire about, oh, I'm sure I'll be back. I'm sure I'll you know. So I do regret that. But I had a lovely time, and I slept back. Well, because I was exhausted from working at a convention in Barcelona. So. Mm-hmm. What museums are on your list for your return?
D'Orsay and Le Rongerie.
Yep.
Not so much the Louvre. I'm not really all that. I mean, I'm just not that into it. But just the small museums. Mm-hmm. You know, I may go back to the Picasso. I think they have a new exhibit. But I'd like to go to the smaller ones. I want to go to, there is a pet cemetery somewhere in Paris.
Ooh.
I want to find that and go to the pet cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to go explore other districts. I'm staying in the 7th again.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, near the Eiffel Tower. And it's a very good district. It's really centrally located. But I want to explore some of the other districts. I want to go to the 10th. I definitely want to go to Montmartre. Yes. I did not make it last time. So I definitely want to go there. So I may just kind of, I have enough time to kind of just explore the different districts. And, you know, Uber is really good over there. It's really quick.
Yeah.
Very easy to get around. I may challenge myself to try to learn the metro. Mm-hmm. I'm going to meet up with Camille, my
wonderful
guide, and we're going to play. And then I have some friends from Seattle who are arriving in Paris on May 5th. So I'll have a couple of days with them too.
That's nice.
And I'm going to sit and I'm going to try to write, try to just journal. And it's been a really busy time and I have not written much new.
Mm-hmm.
And my next area of conquest and interest is poetry. So I would like to read and try to study. And it's been a real neglectful area of my writing education for too long. And I'm suddenly very interested in it. So I just want to wander the city. And the thing is about Paris, if you're wandering around someplace and you get lost, it doesn't really matter because you're in Paris. It's still Paris.
Right. Right.
It doesn't matter, you know, and I always I carried a card with my hotel address on it and I'll have it. And so you can always go,
right.
This is where I need to go. And I want to go to some of those little tiny streets, the little alleyways and shopping places that I didn't know before.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be happy to sit there with a baguette and just stare at the Eiffel Tower.
You know? Yeah. Oh, so how exciting.
It just feels, it's so weird because no other city other than San Francisco, my hometown, has ever really felt like home.
Mm-hmm.
But Paris, it's like, it just feels really like home. So
yeah,
here we go.
That's wonderful. I am so looking forward to international travel again.
Yeah, you know, it's not a big deal. They take such good care of you.
Mm-hmm.
In September, my biggest fear was that I was not going to be able to get on the plane, that something was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to have the right, COVID was going to, something was going to happen.
Right.
I mean, I felt like I was making, you know, an escape or something.
Yeah.
Because when I finally got on the plane and settled, it was like, oh my God, I'm going.
Yeah.
But it really is. I don't feel any qualms about it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My United app keeps reminding me of the trips that I've been playing around with. I have a lot of friends and family. I have no family. I have a lot of friends who feel like family in Israel, in Tel Aviv, and I haven't been since 2019. And their kids keep growing up, you know, like all the babies were in strollers then, and now they're in junior kindergarten. And I just really want to go back and see my friends, but also just sit in a cafe in Tel Aviv and look at the water and pay too much money for a gin and tonic, but enjoy the view of the Mediterranean.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Just let me pay too much money and beg for ice in my water. I can't wait. I can't wait. And also, I really do want to go back to Paris on a longer, more intentional trip, where it's the goal of the trip, because it was such a short trip, but it was just so lovely to walk around. And the Latin Quarter is such a, well, I think all of Paris, right? It's small, windy streets. Because it was, you know, it's an ancient city built on itself, built on itself again, built on itself again. So the streets feel like alleys, and it's so cool.
That was how I felt, you know, in Italy too,
that
it's a city built on a city. And my friend over there that I was kind of guiding me around said every time they try to do a new project, like putting a new water pipe or this, they have to stop because they run into another city. And
right.
It's all, you know, it's all protected. I loved Italy. That was beautiful. And what was interesting is he said all the cobblestone streets, he said, this is why the Italians, and I guess wherever there are cobblestone streets, don't have the hip problems that we have in America, because you walk on, because your hips are always adjusting to the unevenness. Whereas in America, we're slapping down the same on the concrete, on the same flat over and over again. And I thought, well, that was really interesting.
Huh. So it keeps, because it's like being on a physio ball, right? Because you keep adjusting your core, your core stays stronger.
Yeah. You're not just constantly slamming that one area.
Now, I thought we didn't have cobblestone because during the French Revolution, you can fight back if you have cobblestone. The proletariat can fight back because you just, the cobblestone, you can dig it out and throw it at the army.
I did not know that.
I don't think it's why we don't have cobblestone, but I feel like that's certainly, and I think probably during the like Haymarket riots in Chicago, the Union riots, I'm sure that part of what they used for weapons was the brick street.
Well, I found a lot more of that in Italy than in Paris.
Yeah.
But maybe I didn't go to the cobblestone section.
Yeah.
I'll have to get there.
Where did you, where in Italy did you visit?
Again, I went to a writing retreat in Casperia, which is about an hour out of Rome and inland. It's in a very rural area, and it's a stone city on a hill that was once an armory fighting place, and there's no cars. The cars park around the perimeter, and you walk all these steps in and out. So it was just lovely, and we stayed at this amazing palazzo with these wonderful Italian women who just took care of us like mothers. And then I spent a few days before that in Rome, and then I spent a few days after that in Rome, and then I took a day trip to Tuscany. Which is, you know, you got to go back to Tuscany. A day is not, but I did one of those bus tours.
Yeah.
So Italy is another place that I want to go back to.
Yeah, I only went for so I spent a few months working in London, and so during that took a couple weekend trips, one to Belfast and one to Assisi, Italy, via Rome, but. Uh-huh. The goal was to stay in Assisi, and I stayed in the old city, like up on the mountain by the Saint Assisi Cathedral and the St. Clare's, Saint Assisi is maybe a basilica and Clare is a cathedral. I'm not sure, but it was beautiful and all cobblestone and just wandering around. And it wasn't until I left to get on the train that I sort of even realized that there was like a modern city of Assisi that people also visit, because I was so in love with the old city just on the top of the mountain. And it was, I went unintentionally the weekend of, in the Catholic Church, there's a weekend or there's a holiday of, like, I don't know if it's the Ascension of the Holy Ghost, but when, like, the Holy Spirit traveled to Bethlehem to, like, get to Mary. I'm not Catholic, so I'm butchering this.
I am Catholic and I have no clue.
And they light bonfires on the top of all the mountains and hills and by the castles in Italy to guide the Holy Spirit to Israel.
Oh my God.
And so I happened to be in Assisi the weekend of this bonfire festival that was a Catholic festival in a city with two major saints. So you walked up to the castle, which is even higher than the old city and where the basilicas are. You walk up to the castle, and then there's this huge bonfire, and there's bonfires across all of Italy that night.
Oh my God, that must be amazing.
It was so cool. So that's like an early December holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, it's a 3-day weekend and it's a holiday weekend. And so the first couple of days I was there, it was just jam packed with Italian tourists. And then the last couple of days I was there, it was just a quiet little, I love it. I love an old city. I love a little walled city.
Yes.
I love the old city of Jerusalem.
Well, you'd love Kasparia then.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, a friend was in Italy recently for a few weeks, and just her Instagram and hearing from her about it, Italy's climbing the charts again for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many places in Europe, and I'd love to go to Asia as well, but COVID restrictions being what they are, it seems like Europe is a bit more permissible these days for us.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Ah, oh, wonderful. So when friends are heading to Paris, what from your first trip do you recommend people to do? If it's somebody's first trip to Paris, what do you think are three things that they must do?
Wow. You must sit at all the outdoor cafes you can and just watch the people.
Mm.
The people are amazing. And what's so entertaining is that everybody rides these scooters, these electric scooters, everybody in and out of traffic, all and motorcycles. And so people watching was really my thing. And I saw this one woman just dressed beautifully with Louboutin high heels.
Mm-mm.
And she gets on a scooter and takes off down the street. And I'm thinking,
oh my gosh.
Oh my God. I would just say, walk around the city, experience the people, stay at the outdoor cafes, get a baguette and go sit in a park. They really make use of their outdoor space because I was told Paris apartments are very small. So mm-hmm. people are outdoors all the time. Just walk, walk, walk. I don't know that I would say any particular thing. You know, I do, as I said, I didn't get to Montmartre and I want to see that area. But I would say take a cruise on the Seine. I thought the champagne dinner cruise was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I can't, I would just say go walk around, take the tours. They have great, you know, TripAdvisor and those, they have great tours, 3-hour tours. And you can go, you know, have a chocolate tour and walk around and Ooh. Take all the chocolates. You can do all those things. And I would say do them because they get you out into different districts, as you were talking about. And that's what I would say. Just walk,
mm-hmm.
walk, walk, walk. And don't, as I said, don't worry about getting lost. You'll find something interesting.
Ah, wonderful advice. Wonderful advice. I am going to start looking at plane tickets again.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go and just wander. I was in Boston a couple weeks ago to go to a show that unfortunately Omicron rescheduled for us, but it was so fun to just because Boston is windy and cobblestoney and to eat. And we had pizza, and then we went to like a 24-hour Italian bakery to get calzones. That's pizza. What's the Italian pastry? Cannolis.
Oh, cannoli. I love cannoli. God, if you can find a good cannoli.
Yeah.
Oh.
I had a cappuccino cannoli.
Oh, my God.
It was amazing. And then I also got a slice of red velvet cake that I had for breakfast the next day, and it was also quite delicious.
There you go. Now, mm-hmm. in San Francisco, in North Beach, there's a little restaurant called Mama's. It's been there for a gazillion years. Mm-hmm. The best cannoli. So anybody wanting cannoli in San Francisco, it's Mama's on Washington Square in North Beach.
Oof, delicious.
You know, San Francisco kind of Paris are similar in that, they have very different districts and very different communities. And every little community has its own shops, its own streets, its own bookstores, its own. So it's not just one city and then there's a downtown. And I like the European feel of San Francisco. You know? And so it was, maybe that's why I felt so at home in Paris, because everywhere was a different little community.
Yeah.
With their own stuff. Oh, hi, Katie.
This is Spidey.
Hi, Spidey.
He's my 20-year-old.
I love orange kitties. They're my favorite.
Are you trying to get in my coffee? It's not for you. Yeah, I spent a summer in San Francisco in 1996 when I was in college. It was my very first internship in college. And I lived in the Mission. I sublet a bedroom in a 3-bedroom apartment in the Mission. And it was just wonderful. It was magical.
Uh-huh.
It was so, I grew up in Indiana, and so that summer in San Francisco was my first time like living in a big city and taking public transportation significantly. I got trapped on the, there's a song that he'll never get home. He's trapped forever beneath the streets of Boston. He's the man. He'll never get home.
Yeah. I know.
And that happened to me on the BART one night where I took the BART to Oakland to see a speaker, and I didn't have enough money. You pay the card on your way out of the BART.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have the money on my card to get out. I had a $20 bill. But it was like my last week of the internship, and I was like, I'm really going to need those $20. You couldn't use a credit card yet to put money on your card. And I was just kind of panicking, not able to get out of the train station. And somebody gave me like a $5, kind of looked at me and took pity on what was happening. Like the panic on my face of not being able to get off the BART. Because then when I got, you know, there's nowhere to get change. It was like if you put $20 on your card, you couldn't get any change. And my mom used to sing that song all the time. And I was like, it has happened to me. I'm stuck beneath the streets of Oakland. I'm the woman. He'll never get home.
Oh, my God. What a nightmare. What a nightmare.
Yeah. But I really loved getting to be there at 19, it was a very cool experience.
Oh. Well, now you've piqued my interest in Boston.
Boston is really, don't go in February.
No.
But it's the north end of Boston. I think the north end is like the Italian neighborhood. It's cobblestone streets. It's beautiful. The food is so good. There's such a variety of things to do there. The seafood, if you eat seafood, is fantastic. I had some sushi because I wanted to have the chance to have some really good fish and seafood while I was out there. And they've got the I think the T is what their subway is called. But this, they've got really good subway system. It's very walkable. It's a very walkable city with so much history. Oh my goodness, you know. You turn the corner and it's Revolutionary War stuff and information about, you walk through an traditionally Irish neighborhood, and there's information about the potato. There was like this plaza that was a monument and memorial to people who had died in the potato famine in Ireland and the impact of the potato famine on Boston and the Irish community there. There's beautiful like public markets and, you know, like food court areas where you can go and try a lot of local restaurants at once, which I always think is nice.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. It's a very, you'd find it to be a very walkable city.
It sounds very European.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll have to put that on my list.
I'm sure you can find a writing retreat in Boston as an excuse.
As an excuse to go.
Yeah. Jane, well, this has been a delight getting to know you today.
Well, thank you. It's been super fun.
So your book, The Daddy Chronicles, Memoir of a Fatherless Daughter, comes out on March 15th. People can pre-order it now through Whiskey Tit, and I will link to that. Would you like for people to follow you online or find you on the internet?
I'm at Twitter at Jane, J-A-Y-N-E, _ Martin. I'm on Facebook at Jane Martin-Author. And I'm on Instagram, I think, at jane.martin.writer, I think. my website is janemartin-writer.com, and you can pre-order the book through there, too.
Wonderful. I'll make sure that we link to everything so people know how to find you and get their hands on this book.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.